recording is brought to you by Whitworth University. To hear additional programs, please visit www.whitworth.edu/podcast.
See the animal is only from a distance, then to be charmed by it. The closer you get, the more abstract. The dog is named for the variegated privet. Walk away and the wind shakes it and the little leaves flicker, perhaps as if in happiness or the water off. It is not giving up anything, nor is it literal to a fault. The privacy the privet promised. What had seemed headed in one direction took on suddenly a life of its own, the one thing forbidden. The rule of time is you feel yourself growing older. You see yourself from a distance that keeps getting longer. There is a failure in the topiary, yet here we are in the way the growing season never lets the ragged ends of things be still. Something will get us closer and then, poof. I think you see me for nearly what I am. So I want to thank you for coming this evening. It's a beautiful evening out, and it's also really nice to have you here, sort of out there in the beautiful evening. I've had a really amazing time meeting students. You know who you are, and it's just been a pleasure. I didn't know what to expect. Really lovely, wonderful, smart, engaged, and people seem to really like each other. That's pretty great. And I also want, in particular, to thank Lori for her hospitality, your hospitality, friendship, and for your poems. Is there anything that can be done with the light? I'm like almost totally blind. Maybe turn up the house lights then, because I at least want to see people. You can't hear either? Okay. Is that better? Maybe I should use the other mic.
Great. Thank you. You can hear? Okay. Well, you can hear, but I can't see, so I don't know. Okay. So, again, thank you, and now I'm going to move on to the better view. With a better view out back, we sit where storefronts dangle, much better from my perspective. Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Thank you. Yes. To the better view, with the better view out back, we sit where the storefronts dangle, starfish on strings, for your rear view mirror, for your Christmas tree, shirts festooned with sand buckets, and the titular rumble of ocean is only a backdrop to a thought we might or might not have, the way traffic sounds back home. Back home, the freeway sounds around us, we tell ourselves, that's the ocean. There isn't much to do, so we have to make do and describe the early summer visitors walking past, licking their cones, the dogs their balls. Rat dog, John begins, loud enough they can hear, but so what is heard came out of which mouth? And George gives best of show to a woman in white capris, pink shades, cream-colored headband, mostly for her purse that is also white, and who would think to carry that to the beach? The man sitting next to us would hear our chatter if he weren't already somewhere else. And wasn't it for him, not us, we said all this? Here's where it gets rough, where I should step off the porch and go inside myself, move in closer a little to the scene I've set myself up to watch. Still, there is an ocean inside of the man sitting next to us. In the ocean is a world of things eating each other, one of us says. And how is it The show you're watching is not the show you sit down for. Now another passerby has stopped to admire the yellow Porsche the man sitting next to us parked in front of Osborne's ice cream, then came up to sit on the porch and watch. I seem to be drawn to bird blinds. I don't know if you spent much time in a bird blind. They seem to be one of those things that are not necessarily destination sites, but things that you happen upon, and they can be quite fancy. They can be constructed of if not brick and mortar, at least wood and nails, or they can be these sort of things made out of tangles and brushes of whatever's available. And I think I've given some thought to it, but not a lot of thought, but I think that there's something about being able to be on one side of something and being surrounded by the thing that you're looking at and looking at it, being sort of invisible and being, I think I like being a voyeur, so there's that aspect to it. And who knows whether the things that you're looking at are aware of you or not, but you sort of feel like you're participating in the scene, but you're an observer at the same time. I find lots, so there's a number of bird blinds in my poems. This poem is called Every Hole in the Bird Blind Says, match your shape to my shape, head to hole, your eye to what I offer. Sure enough, a duck here and over there, no sky, no duck. One eye to a high hole and the sky opens to wires in the arms of high power transmission lines. What little I know, the formation they travel in, the little they know of solitude or progress. Another hole that's in a pond on which the light is failing. Ducks paddle around and coots with their unlikely feet churn water. No two holes connect. There are people who believe that we, the people, are the people, finding among themselves inevitable friendships and lovers who are their destiny, and find themselves in one continuous scene. I want to be that one hole low in the corner, admitting only a few grasses. If I remove all that is not bird, I say, the landscape will jump less. He says, stain is what I let the landscape do to me. When my friend John Pickett came home from California some years ago, he announced rather casually that he had that big C. I flew down to see him before he came back to Portland, which is where we're both from. I'm going to read you a few poems on that topic. Drive. It must have seemed to him a sign of his secret health that he could drive into the city to pick up his friend who'd flown in to see him off. For what more clearly signifies vitality than a stream of cars until they become traffic rushing over asphalt, each to its singular destination, interview, date, any event suggesting a going on, but also a possible opening up, life swerving, new job, new love, piling up unforeseen signs and exits, all with the rest of my life in front. That mostly we prefer to call forever, as in, I will love you forever. So when he pulled up to the pickup passenger zone, I was unprepared for his glow. I expected terminal to have tamped him down, sallowed his skin, but he was so much the same John. I couldn't imagine then how he could get from how he looked to dead in the time they gave him. It must have seemed to him I was just along for the ride. My life was without weight, so we could fly past triple-length trucks in the girdle grip of a viaduct that spit us out on the high flat tail of a bus. I couldn't say slow down and rise to reveal my pettiness. The matter was delicate. Nothing to lose much. He must have thought he would show me just how easy it could be. Cup. The couple at the next table has just met, so we surmise. I was going to say, so we surprise. The woman is in her late 40s, blonde. Her date speaks with an accent that isn't European. I sit nearer their table than John, across from me, looking over my shoulder through the picture window at traffic passing as the woman is explaining why she is cautious, is telling her date she wants a man she can trust. She is wondering why some people oppose social normalities, accepting a behavior I cannot hear into their personal lives. When I asked John for his answer to the old question, what would you do with your life if you had 6 months, 1 year to live? He'll answer, get divorced, because he still has an idea of happiness. He carries with him the spit cup, the slick, shocking foam from the infection that lingers where the cancer is. Extinction is heard from the next table, is a drag. He's in love with Anne, another friend. We know what we don't see, and I want to hear more. I want to know more about that other life, the one that's not personal. On religion, war, nature, and the horse. Tried to get everything in the title. John's unabstracted death for me. Or, to put it another way, the idea took possession of him. These things happen. A stone bench happened, so I sat down on it. Flowers nodded around me with the requisite attention to spacing and abandon. Now I seem to be and to know what it is to disappear, to want to. Well, my friendships seem a little ragged today. I should study nature instead. The horse, for instance. The further away it runs, the more abstract. Or the idea of the idyllic garden. A child in a garden in Lebanon whose legs and arms suddenly mismatch, alarmed by how they don't connect, burning flesh to burning flesh. If I turn the page now, how abstract is that? Talked a little bit earlier, talked with students a bit about themes and images in poems. And I have a lot of, I wouldn't go into themes, but I have a lot of insects and worms and such in my poems, and therefore in my imagination, and in my way of, it's what I see, or it's kind of, I'm drawn to them. I think it's partly because insects drive processes from pollination to decomposition, and the fact that they are ubiquitous and nearly invisible seems just sort of astonishing. One of the world's experts on the earthworm is a 97-year-old woman who lives in McMinnville, Oregon, named Dorothy McKay Fender, and she's the world's expert on the Oregon giant native earthworm, which some people have mentioned having seen an article in the paper recently where it was rediscovered. Yeah, remember that? And there was a description of it that actually doesn't exactly match her description. What they found, and this was in the Palouse soil, which is kind of loose valley soil, is somewhat smaller and perhaps doesn't have the emit quite the odor, so I don't know if they found it or not, but it might still be out there, or maybe they've gotten smaller through the years, because they were last seen decades and decades and decades ago. Anyway, she's the world's expert on this earthworm, as well as very knowledgeable about predaceous earthworms. Now, this particular poem used to be a crown of sonnets. Now it's I lopped it off, so it's kind of half a crown, and it's a form that has the amplitude to admit both of the argumentative nature of the sonnet as well as the repetitive nature of Villanelle's and Sistina's. So, you know, the best of both worlds. Worm, to a rumor of lilies. Oh, I should say about the form, if you're not familiar with it, that the last line of one becomes the first of the next sonnet, more or less. I should say more or less. I followed it more or less. That is the form. Worm, to a rumor of lilies. And the epigraph is, ah, the gravitas of the hunt. One. Digestive turned blue, so the woman said. Said, I write my own islands, and red was urinary. Under the astigmatic lens of her naked eye, she followed the tracks. Looking at worms for a long time, she said, a worm in its lifetime moves short distances. She knew to follow them. How? There is the solace of repetition. I like to think she came to worms the way one comes for the first time to love, because sight fails too. Sight fails, love comes. There was something I couldn't see. Its systems are vivid, the woman said. I saw that. As I saw that open lengthwise, it tended to curl, closing its borders. She pinned it open. Earth eater, secretor of casings. If the brain is wired for syntax, you are passion syntax made manifest. And now my surface is changed and looked at. Now that what is looked at is changed, what is looked for is gone, and even an ancient worm in suspension in its slender test tube of formaldehyde carries an air of something imagined, and the woman driven to dig for them, they're out there, they smell like lilies. Four. Name Oregon giant earthworm, Drillalirius Muscle freshi, status federal candidate, description, 2-foot-long pinkish-white earthworm. Overview, Oregon's giant earthworm was discovered in 1937 when a live specimen was unearthed in Salem. Distribution, not much is known about these worms, and the extent of their distribution remains a mystery. What smelled like lilies after rain curls back. Everything is in there. Directions to how it works. What do you do for a shadow? Dark earth, how touch draws out the something that doesn't gather up readily. Flüchtling, the German for refugee, and my German is non-existent, so I might be mispronouncing it. I crouched low at the hole where, prodded it with a stick where, something resembling sodden feather or fur found in the wild crab apple, the cavity. Lumpen, the body shifts, loose parts inside, no more a nation. No borders there is a trembling, the everything inside has lost its place. Loose parts and slide. A nation of refugees. No knowing how to move. Because it is flesh disturbed. Because it has weight, it will shift. How shall the self remain? How shall itself remain unheld? But held yet in the mind and dragged inside. This called Beds of Clandestine. I have nephews who are 11,
the twins, and they've always, like a lot of kids, they like to be terrorized by stories. And I usually have to get updates from them on what they're afraid of, because if they're not afraid of it, my storytelling abilities are wasted. So this is about them. One. Justin sleeps with a stuffed malaria parasite in his arms, walks on the bent tops of his toes so it makes mine hurt, loses his arrow in a spring-leafed maple that hoarded the arrow that he wanted back. "Look for it," he said to me, "when the leaves fall off. Mine to find the half-hidden," and I went back for it. I looked. Two. He breaks the pieces where they're scored, stacks them in his palm, places them on his tongue rapidly, one and one, like laying tile before the glue dries. The bars are full-sized, and Justin is not, but the favors he has scrounged are Hershey's 8-ounce, and now they are Justin's 7. Three, he was the larger twin, 3.8 pounds. It was not one boy one day and the next another. It's not my best advice to hide what you can't have in your back pocket, but pleasure spent and pleasure hoarded is more than twice itself. To suck this hard, it is like annexing the neighborhood. Four, name everything that can break. Start with the obvious, the unintended, that buckles and holds before it doesn't. Beds on either side of the chair upended where the story ended, and sleep wouldn't come. Here smooth limbs insinuate, something blind undoes in darkness. Child, this is a phase. Over the covers you flow. Should wind be the mother of fear, I feed you doubt. You toss caution to the floor. Say, that's not scary. Again, I'll show you. Your pleasure's worn. You wear it, the long alluvial grin. If monster is all that scares you, then I'll send them. Here is your childhood. Come in. How's the sound? Okay, back there. The history of the glass flowers at Harvard is maybe familiar to some of you. How many people have seen those glass replicas of those botanical? Can I see a show of hands? Okay. I just wanted this on. I won't over-explain it if you've seen it. Well, Leopold and Rudolf Blaschka were a father and son German glassmaker, and they were commissioned by the Harvard Botanical Museum to make replicas of plant anatomy, detailing plant anatomy. And they were for study. They were for teaching tools. They were not made as aesthetic objects, but they have become aesthetic objects more than teaching tools at this point. And they were made in the late 19th century, and they made about 4,400 of these. They had made sea organisms of different sorts. So this was between, say, 1890 and 1940, so about 50 years. If you get to Cambridge, you should go see these. They're well displayed now. One of the things that was really compelling to me was something that Leopold Blaschka said about this in answer to a question he probably got a lot, which was, you know, how do you do this? Because they're exquisite in their detail. And he said, many people think that we have some secret apparatus by which we can squeeze glass suddenly into these forms, but it is not so. We have tact. My son Rudolf has more than I have because he is my son, and tact increases in every generation. Notes on tact and the made-up world. The glass flowers lodged under glass make transparency's virtue transparent, make perfection the object of the object. I sing glass for flesh, glass for cells, flower that says something a flower can't. Against the made thing, imagination scrapes its cheek, for the beauty is made poignant, for how, out of unlikeliness, the many-stamened eucalyptus globula extends the gaze that studies it. I touch it, it makes a sound, I say it's singing. Still, why, if I think it is plastic, will I like it less than if I think it is glass, which is the same thing, which is not the thing itself? Once in a foreign city, I mistook for a line of men pissing against a wall at night, a line of men praying against the wall. The way flowers don't break makes me think the less said, and the backs of the men performing their private devotions. Some wanting is containable. I understand the wall, standing for nothing save the attention of prayer and waste. Old Vlashka, where are those glass eyes you made to order, useless and convincing? And now, the blown fruit, whose promise was to render visible disease for study, shows its allegiance to decay in the dimming, pitting, flaking, in the crazing, crizzle, and it is moving in the display of parts, in the mimicry of stamen and pistil. Nor does a mind imagining the parts as parts and parts as they might present themselves in flower, attempt by this to dissuade decay's sweet roughages. This poem is called Bright Things. The old man who is dying quietly when he was 2 swallowed a safety pin, who was almost still now, then was a rambunctious child, putting a bright object into his mouth because it was bright, because his mouth was how he knew bright things. These are the either ends. Then was decisive, declarative, and accidental. The flesh ripped a little. You wouldn't think about that in the moment. In the moment, tastes like something to be gotten rid of. Fast, he coughs, tries, it sinks deeper in. The mother would turn and everything happens fast. The boy unable to speak then again, and the crazed woman descending on him. Sorry. That would be Whidbey. Would that be Whidbey over there? Stare down at the water long enough and the boat moves backwards. Would there be birds on a ferry? There would be words. Yours? This boat is not for sitting or sunning. It is not for us to turn and dock anywhere. I came for something. Automobiles line up like the points in the argument, while all the time were you thinking of pleasure? Turn your engine off, cormorant, and that would be Whidbey. Whidbey, if there are crows at the river. Whidbey, where there are stumps. There is only one way to get there, departure. But the river now is jumpy in our wake, and loneliness attends me like the printed dress that keeps turning up one summer on different women, different colored hair. Move these before they fall. Whatsoever you. When you are old, And when you are removed from those people who knew you back when and set down among strangers, you have no past. You are an old man with his chin in his fists. You are an old man with his chin, gracious when. You are yet another old man waiting in some line or other. You are yet another old man waiting in some line or other. Gracious when you let the woman in back of you go first, because there is no hurry whatsoever you are in. It is not graciousness that moves you to the back of the line. You look around you, even now you see is growing. You look around you at the young people, like people you have never known anyone like. When you're young, you must be seen by other people, and for any reason whatsoever. Now you must be seen by a glance in the mirror, someone you would be only if you were to stick around that long. The people who knew you once, what they saw when they saw you was not the fish pulled out of the water, dangled from the line it twists on. Kids swoop down on their bright bicycles like flocks of birds and run. They run, red lights. Say the unseen needs a body in the world. And that you are a woman to sit and watch. Would you ask the icon be reduced to tears, to certainty? I had been through the gift shop, crowded with nuns and pictures of nuns, but in the chapel where we sat together in those drifted rows and the icon alone was looked on. Symbol of discontent, why can't I let disaster find its own way? Why hurry it? This waiting and wanting the weeping to start and doubting it, proof to dissemble the face. Waiting as I do for a certain word. I have been through the gift shop. The walls are crowded like the walls of those rooms, transfigured by the faces of the dead and missing. It is left to the experts to make the matches. The country that practices torture has moved on. I have a lot of gloomy poems, don't I? You can laugh, though. So a friend of mine was, maybe there are people in this room in the same situation, was in the Navy during Vietnam. And it occurred to me, of your parents and grandparents, yeah. Front rows. One of the things that occurred to me, not a unique thought, is that Vietnam is as much a time as it is a country for many people. This is called Distances at Sea. I let my eyelids hover unshut like things adrift in case a ship should pass at such distance I'd see it. Mine was a small boat. My gunwales welcomed a wash of the smaller fish, casting themselves sideways, flattening, clearing the sides like high jumpers in order to take bites from my legs. In that vastness, they smelled my weakness. How close the ships looked, though, I couldn't make out a single person on board at that. What was distance now, anyway? Only the dark shape rising from the surface. I thought they should see me. In my body, I felt as big. I saw many ships, many days, and then the one that, as I waved my handkerchief faster, turned, it grew larger. The one who spotted me might, for a moment, have looked up and then beckoning his mate that a man in a flat boat was over there, look, readjusted his eye to the scope. And he would go on looking a while for a man among white coats, white caps riffling like handkerchiefs until he was convinced that he had made me up. Mattress. I read this poem in the class today, and it was strange to read it with more restraint than I usually read it with, I think. We'll find out. I guess it's kind of a love poem, too. I didn't say that. One, John said it was a mattress tossed there by an angry sea, and I said, or thrown over the embankment from the highway above by some son of a bitch and dragged down there until we walked closer and looking down from a fold of land slightly above, saw that it was a slab of sandstone, unlike the rest, but similar and beautiful now. And then I said, anyway, I didn't believe in an angry sea. Two, the role of kiss is to never swallow what it craves, not like the heart. Nothing breaks where it falls, though someone is left suspended until another's mouth affixes. I don't believe in, someone says, and something ordinary comes next. God, or premarital sex. The earthworm, locking its lips, takes in what it passes through. It carves, it craves, it filibusters romance. I am troubled by belief. The kiss repeats. See how it swallows and where it lands, and then the other body bending so to catch it. So one of the characteristics that I like about the sonnet is how inherent in the form is the mind's argument with itself. I've written a number of sonnets. Sometimes I have to sort of insist that they are sonnets. So this one is called Sonnet. That's what you do, when, I guess, when you're not sure it's going to be read the way you want. And it has, as an epigraph, something I learned when I worked at the Nature Conservancy, which I did for almost 10 years. The Nature Conservancy is interested in, their focus was on endangered species and biodiversity. So the epigraph is, the threatened vernal pool fairy shrimp is a 3/4-inch translucent crustacean with a 1-year life cycle and a unique survival strategy. Invisible in vernal pools, the fairy shrimp have no secrets. But if their bodies are in water, as transparent as desire, what can desire hold? This close to bodiless, what they possess, they will not have, and what's seen through seems only there by her imagining them, so that later, when his fingers touch her navel, I'll kiss you there only, is what he said, and let his mouth roam up to where the quarter moon of one breast quieted him. She could feel how he had practiced this before, with his eyes closed and alone. Manifesto. Robin in the bird bath below turns its head and with one lunge manifests the smaller bird perched like the last born on the cobble edge to fly off. Then dips its breast into the solitary, shimmies water down its wings, butters them thoroughly, both sides. How so? Lifts one switching wing and turns its head back to pick at whatsoever buried itself there, even in the beginning, perhaps because we are not so young and have imparted our own space, small part of what keeps me here, still how your whole self weeping once shook with. Read three more poems. I was looking. Do you know what a go around is? I didn't know what a go-around was, but it's this. It's used for holidays, and I think it has a religious significance. And it just moves in circles. That's what it does, and it can be used as a decorative element. And do you know what floating islands are? In the category of food. This is not a test. I'm just curious. So this is a new introduction to me too. So there's some kind, it's a meringue. It's just floating. Did you think that islands float? I never could quite figure out islands. Like, are they? What are they attached to? Because they're attached to the ocean floor. Right? They must be. They're heavy. They can't just float there. This is called the least amount of stirred air figure needed. She made floating islands. Didn't all islands float? There were equivalencies of ocean on both sides. So we tried to imagine what can be holding them up. On the backs of what? We were porous and watched her scoop the burnished meringues out of the glass dish while over there, lit candles made the go-round of pounded metal spin faster and the figurines on top make a sound that was not music but was like music with the horns in their hands and their mouths open. How she could be that unhappy and not know it. I'll let you get that for me, my mother, is how my mother asked for things she wanted, so that what she wanted was no different in her mind from what I wanted to do for her, and furthermore, because what she wanted and what I wanted were the same, we were the same. Years before I could parse her phrasings, I felt her claim. Do I like this? She asks now. Have I been here before? Now turn where to... what? And how does a candle burned low make the go-round move? This one is called Part of Which is Remembered and the Other Part is Not Forgotten. And it also has an epigraph, which is kind of a definition. Of muscle, Middle English. It comes from the Middle English, from the Old French, from the Latin musculus. In the naming, as in the matter of, in the naming muscle. So, there is a common a definition, common derivation of mouse and muscle. The path was made of things cast off too, and ground down to be mute, indistinct. Bark brown sifted with cellulose and insect bits. On top, plain sight, you were a thing intact in miniature of toenails, whiskers, naked tail, the color of birth. Una said, pink, and I said, scrubbed. But you were even before scrubbed, slid onto the cardboard back of a pad of paper, stiffest thing around. You came alive. Who was more startled? How could skin the light seize through, hold something in? Soft without cushion, soft in its surface, hard depths. On my fingers, the smell of what birthed you. The smell of your skin, the smell of inside of her. It presses itself. Little bent knuckle, you were tucked. You were new, and then... the skin on your back stretched to translucence. Shiny, so an eye looking in might see itself. In the folds, your surprising extremities gathered as in arrangement for intimate conversation. We talked to you. You were new, and then from the rudderless ground, you were lifted. You were nobody's business. We'll keep it, save it, matchbox, shoebox. Someone runs past on the path, and the motion of muscles is the motion of small mice running back and forth beneath the skin. It might be the beginning of any number of animals in our minds, and all the time it is only one thing, perfectly formed and indeterminate. And I'm going to conclude with this poem, which begins the my book, and it's called I Didn't Think Much About What It Was. And thank you again for coming. And I would answer questions if you have it, but it seems like we could just as well, you know, go outside. Something about the evening causes the walkers-by to walk awkwardly so that the one watching watches to see if they might grow more graceful. Is it the wet, cold earth or something in the child's foot, as if sideways was the straightest way? The music is background to the children, to the girl in pink moving lap to lap to lap, lifted, snuggled, padded, slapped gently. When you die, you exempt yourself. You take yourself out of the trouble the world's in. There was always a face that loved that child. About her, these, now, in their lives, small girl, old woman, teenager in a tight shirt, Barbie, her chest says, and there's a general stumbling up the tortured grass to the orchestral war of 1812. Because it's dark, because we're brief, a bat flies overhead, squeaking and tangled in no one's hair, as if it had consequences. Shortly, even so, the bridge lights up. Thank you. Should we just go out, you think? Yeah. Thanks again.